Federal researchers are now saying they're willing to allow new studies into ibogaine nearly 40 years after regulators ended research into this powerful psychedelic that many scientists say can stop addictions on a dime. Ibogaine is made from an African root. One researcher says, though, you won't take it to end up in a cuddle puddle at a rave because it causes hellish trips up to 24 hours through past trauma. No one who takes it wants to do it again, but they may not have to. Research in other countries shows ibogaine can end substance cravings after one treatment, but it can also cause cardiac arrest, which is why it's currently illegal in the U.S. New York Times psychedelic medicine reporter Andrew Jacobs has done extensive reporting into ibogaine. And Andrew, it seems like there is a big resurgence of interest.
Yes, there's a great resurgence of interest, and that's partly because so many war veterans have gone to Mexico and other clinics out of the country to do ibogaine therapy to treat PTSD, traumatic brain injury, and other difficult mental health issues. And at the same time, we're seeing a response to the opioid epidemic, and you have states like Kentucky and Ohio who have been considering spending some of the money they're getting from the opioid settlement of funds on ibogaine research.
Well, and then many people have their own anecdotal evidence. Full disclosure, I have a friend who paid the $5,000 to $15,000 to go to Mexico to have a treatment. This was for alcoholism, which most people know that one treatment, one rehab, does not stop alcohol addiction. In this person's case, it did. But talk about the problems. Obviously, cardiac arrest. I think you say at least 24 deaths in the past decades.
Yeah, so I think those figures have to be taken with a grain of salt. There is no doubt a cardiac risk with ibogaine. The issue that many researchers point out is a lot of opioid addicts, long-term opioid users, have severe underlying health issues, including cardiovascular issues. So that makes them especially susceptible. The other point that researchers have been making, backed up by research, is that you can mitigate those risks, first of all, by screening out patients who are at higher risk, but also by ensuring that those who are doing the therapy are hooked up to a heart monitor. And thirdly, giving patients magnesium both before and during the treatment. And that seems to effectively mitigate or address those risks. And the researchers that I talked to who've done many hundreds or thousands, in some cases, of treatments, they have had no fatalities.
Well, and also others are saying this is exactly why it needs to be researched by government agencies and then regulated. And you've got professionals who have been studying this. You spoke with Dr. Deborah Mash. We've spoken to her in the past as well. She's a professor of neurology at the University of Miami. She's been studying ibogaine since the early 1990s. If memory serves, some of her work she does in a boat offshore in Florida because it is illegal.
Yeah, so the clinic that she ran for many years was in the Caribbean, mostly served Americans. I think she had over 300 patients there and had no reported fatalities.
And says it's the most powerful addiction interrupter I've ever seen. Why? What is it said to do?
Well, it seems that ibogaine has two distinct modes of action. It really helps with the agony of withdrawal. It's very remarkable to that extent. And then the other part is once people have come out of the treatment, it seems to head off the desire to use again.
And then you mentioned the veterans who have the traumatic brain injuries. It seems to do what? Rewire the brain? Something about neuroplasticity.
Right. So neuroplasticity is basically the ability of the brain to form new connections, new neurons, to sort of interrupt very looping thought patterns that you get stuck thinking about a trauma or thinking about something in your life that you can't get out of. And what this does is it allows you to get out of that loop and form new ways of seeing, for example, unresolved trauma in your past, and just gives you a way to kind of step outside and understand how that trauma has perhaps informed your substance abuse. And the same with PTSD. It seems to get at that sort of the root trauma that is perhaps responsible for the psychological issues you're facing. People who have done it said it just really gives you perspective on that unresolved trauma.
And in so doing, changes your behavior. You talk about a small study that was published earlier this year in the journal Nature Medicine. Again, with military veterans with traumatic brain injuries, they underwent a single ibogaine therapy, marked improvements in disability, psychiatric symptoms, cognition. Dr. Nolan Williams, who was the lead author and is also the director of the Brain Stimulation Lab at Stanford, said it's the most dramatic drug effect I've ever captured in an observational study. But that's not enough, an observational study. What's the impediment? What would agencies in the U.S. be able to do to take it further?
The gold standard is sort of your double-blind placebo trial. One group is getting the drug in question and one group is getting a placebo. And that is tough to do with psychedelics, you know, especially if you're expecting to have a hallucinogenic journey of some sort and you feel nothing. So that's part of the problem with studying these drugs. Not to say there's not a way around it, and which is all the more a reason these researchers are asking the FDA to allow studies to go forward in the future.
Well, but you mentioned this psychedelic journey. And it, from what I have heard from friends, it is a nightmare. I mean, you literally see things from your past that you might not have remembered. It's like a forced march through pain and trauma.
That's how it's been described by many people. Again, it's not the kind of psychedelic drug that you would want to go to a rave and do. Yeah, the accounts are really remarkably similar. There is this review, like you call it, this forced march through events of the past that some of which you may have forgotten, especially traumatic ones, and you're sort of forced to confront those memories. And it's very, very visual. But at the same time, when you've come through it, having that perspective of seeing that trauma from the sort of disembodied perspective suddenly gives you perspective on those torments. Mm.
During this trip, you sit with a doctor. You don't do this alone, but there are treatment centers in Mexico, in Brazil. What do we know about their claims and their research into their success?
So the clinic in Brazil, it's not a clinic that Americans can go to. It's for Brazilians, and it's largely focused on crack cocaine addiction. But the doctor there, Bruno Rasmussen, has been doing that for many years, and I think over 1,000 patients. He has a, quote, cure rate, I'll put it that way, of over 70%. After one session. And he too has not reported any fatalities. And he's got pretty good data to back that up. The clinics in Mexico, which are privately run, a lot of those are now partnering with researchers in the US and starting to sort of get data out of those clinics. But again, I think what we need in the US here is sort of an FDA regulatory approach.
And by the way, in the early 90s, during the crack epidemic here, there were promising animal studies. The FDA approved human trials. What happened?
Yeah, in the 1990s, the FDA was studying ibogaine for crack addiction. And despite what seemed to be promising results at the time, they pulled the plug after a report surfaced of fatalities linked to the cardiac risks of the drug.
And by the way, you don't just go and have some cocktails while you're going to get this magic pill. I mean, as we've said, the treatment itself is just horrendous from what we can understand. And then there's protocol in Brazil, for instance, there's mandatory PrEP. You have to abstain from drugs for a couple of weeks. There's counseling before and after. This is not a breeze.
No, that's not a recreational experience. And it's something that you have to be very mindful going in. It's a therapy. It's not just a dropping a drug and expecting a cure. You have to go in with the intention of wanting to deal with some issue, and you have to adhere to all the requirements. And I think that's what people might misunderstand about it. It's not a miracle drug that you just take a pill and you're fine. You have to really work at it. It's a tool.
Although you quote people who have done it who believe it is a miracle because they come out of it on the other side with absolutely no cravings. But I wonder, too, obviously there are questions about can people's hearts and physical being sustain this. But going through that kind of an emotional terror and you can't get out of it while you're in the middle of a trip— is there concern? Have there been people who harm themselves because they're overwhelmed by the emotion?
I have not heard about that, and I'll tell you why. These therapies are done in a medical setting. The ones that are recommended, the ones that are not fly-by-night, you're never alone. You're being monitored the entire time to help you through those difficult moments, and you're also prepared. You've also done preparation. You have a certain sense of what to expect. Not to say it's easy, but I think, you know, going back to your earlier point, you have to want to get better. You know, you have to want this. So in that sense, it's not a miracle. The people who've described it as a miraculous are people who were desperate to kick this disorder.
Many of them opioid addicts. and many people are pushing hard for the government to study the possibility of ibogaine. You quote Henry Lucas, the chief operating officer of the Kentucky Harm Reduction Coalition. He's in recovery from opioid dependence, and he says, we got to try something because we're desperate.
I mean, that's the thing. You know, the argument that this is too dangerous to study, I think, also overlooks the fact that the people that we're talking about, the alternative is pretty grim. You know, many of them will die anyway, most likely from a fentanyl overdose of some kind. And the other thing to keep in mind is many interventions, medical interventions, have risks associated with them. And what these experts say is, you know, we learn to manage those risks, and that's how we should approach ibogaine and not write it off as an off-limits drug just because it has a real clear cardiac risk. They say it is manageable, and that's how we should approach this drug.
That's New York Times psychedelic medicine reporter Andrew Jacobs, who's devoted his work to psychedelic drugs like ibogaine. Andrew, thank you so much, and we will stay tuned. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.